So I think it's recording. Okay. So hi and welcome back again to another episode of the Big Picture Podcast. I have a very special guest here today, our very good friend of the family, and a longtime listener of the Big Picture Podcast. Actually, I'll just let her introduce herself. Over to you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Renee Gould. I'm a collection development librarian at a small private college in the state of Florida. And yeah, I think that's it. I have two kids.
Thanks for joining us on this episode. We actually met a few years back through our kids' school. My son, my first son and your first daughter went to the same daycare. And then that's how we met. And we've stayed in touch ever since. Our kids do the same sports together twice a week. We meet up every now and then to have breakfast, brunch. We meet up at the public library whenever they have local events. So it's been a very fun interaction, especially with fellow parents, and our kids are around the same age. So that's always something I actually seek out, because parenting could be difficult. Parenting could be tough. It's highly rewarding, as you definitely agree. But then most parents are just figuring it out along the way. We're first-time parents, meaning there's a lot of things we don't know, and those things are more than the things we know. And of course, you have your parents around you. My wife and I, we sometimes have our parents around when they visit. And of course, that helps a lot. So just jumping right into that, how would you describe the impact of having experienced parents around to help with this parenting journey and so on and so on?
I don't know how I could have done it without my parents. I am so grateful. So I moved to Florida 13 years ago at this point. I can't believe it goes by fast. And I just moved down here. Essentially, I moved down to Florida to be with my husband, a man who became my husband.
Nice.
It's been wonderful. And then I got pregnant about 5 years ago. And I mentioned that to my parents, and they're like, let me come on down. So my parents moved down 10 days before my oldest was born. And I am so grateful, because being a mother, being a parent in general, it's tough. Just having that extra support around. I mean, I'm very blessed. So we weren't initially close. We were about an hour away from each other. They moved to North Tampa. I was living in St. Pete at the time.
Okay.
And it was tough. And I'm grateful they were close. Mm. But when I had the second child, I realized that I can't do this alone. I can't make the hour commute when I needed I needed advice, or I just need a break. Mm. I'm just so grateful my parents are, I moved closer to them, right, and they are able to help me when I need it. So yeah, I'm so appreciative of that.
Yeah.
Advice they have given me, that extra pair of hands. I mean, especially the first 2 years when your kids are so needy.
Yep.
That extra pair of hands, even just feeding you. I mean, my parents are wonderful. I'm horrible when it comes to cooking. I'll just flat out admit it. I'm just horrible. If I can't boil it or fry it, I don't know what to do with it. My parents are great, and they help out with food. I'm very lucky.
Nice. All of those things are definitely things I can relate with, and my wife also can relate with that. During the second pregnancy, our second boy, of course, our physical capabilities were severely limited, especially as the pregnancy progressed. And I found myself actually stepping up and making something in the kitchen and, you know, putting things together just to help. Sometimes helping even looks like taking the first son for a walk, and then we just go out, take a walk for like 1 hour. And even when the second boy arrived, and I now take both of them on a walk together, we have this stroller that can accommodate both of them. And sometimes that's just what helping looks like. And of course, like I said earlier, my parents, my mom visits every now and then, my mother-in-law visits every now and then, and that helps significantly. Having the first son in school also helps, because just keep him in school all day, so there is, you know, less tantrums to deal with throughout the course of the day, and so on and so forth. So, and of course, activities. I mentioned earlier how our two first children do, even your second daughter has also the same sports as well. So that twice a week for 30 minutes in the morning, even helps him, all the kids, I believe, to have some kind of structure they look forward to. Kids learn the most when they have structure around them, when they are free to play. And of course, when everything is routine, they do so well when there is an established routine. And of course, parents, having parents around helps a lot with that. So that's definitely something I can agree with. Yeah. Yeah. So pivoting on that, there is this thing about keeping kids entertained with TV and phones and tablets, iPads. And of course, it leads to this conversation about screen time. How much is too much? How much is too little? Screen time doesn't always have to be, okay, they're just watching something to keep them engaged. Nowadays, there are educational videos that they actually learn how to pronounce certain words. They learn basic math and English pronunciations. And so even sentence construction, there are videos that help with that. So from your experience as an experienced mom of two daughters, what would you say about screen time? Just screen time as a topic. What's your take on screen time?
Well, there's always a happy medium. So, and we're still figuring that out as we go along. I grew up with TV in the house. TV was always on. Was I always watching it? Not necessarily, but it was always there. And it was often the background noise. So with my kids, it's just trying to, we're still figuring it out. We try not to put on, especially the TV, because, yeah, once the TV's on, they're sitting and they're just glued to it. It doesn't matter what the show is. They're just glued. So trying to figure out that balance, because, I mean, there's so much benefits of getting out and being active. Our goal is to not have the TV as the babysitter.
Right.
But after a long day being active, there is nothing wrong with having the downtime with the TV.
Yeah.
Now, the tablet itself, that's a whole other area that we haven't really explored. I know I have parental influence that are trying to encourage tablets. And I'm okay with that. I mean, the public library has tablets that they lend out, and I have given that to my kids to use, and it's wonderful. I mean, the educational programs are great. We're just trying to figure out what that balance is. I mean, I grew up in the 80s, so I knew a time before the computer. Well, I guess computers have been around forever, but the PC and the computer actually in your house. Right. I mean, I think my family acquired that in, I think it was 1993. I've always had like free reign access to the TV, to the computer. So I've seen the positives and I've seen the negatives. I've seen the positives of how it could encourage kids learning, the growth, the socialization to an extent. I mean, we have family that's not nearby, and having those tools to communicate to those family and friends, it's wonderful. My kids look forward to speaking to their aunts and uncles and cousins.
Nice.
So that element I love about technology. You are bringing people who are not physically close together, but there are downsides with that technology by not being active. The dark side of technology, of communicating to strangers that are up to no good.
Yep.
My kids are young, so luckily that element is something we haven't explored yet. But it scares me because I know they are approaching that level of that scariness, and I don't even know right now. The kids do not have tablets.
Everything you said is something I definitely relate to. Also, growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, I'm from Nigeria, so you go to school and then the TV channels would even come on around 4 or 5 p.m. So it wasn't even like a 24-hour broadcasting situation. But then the TV channels come on right after we get back from school. So do our homework and then we turn on the TV, watch cartoons and then eat dinner and then go to bed. And on weekends, the TV channels come on way earlier because now they realize kids are home and they need to start programming early. So the channels start broadcasting around 7 a.m. and then on weekends. And then we end up finding ourselves watching TV the whole day. But then our parents would remind us to say, go do your homework, go read a book, any book or something. Just go play. And of course, it was unsupervised play. Kids back then would just go outside, play in the front yard or play in the backyard, whatever the case is, and get tired, come back home, eat lunch, eat dinner, and then go to bed. So growing up with that, and now, of course, in this day and age, having my own children and seeing the stark difference, nowadays, TV doesn't even have to be on a TV. You can watch TV on your phone, on a tablet, on whatever device. You can carry TV with you anywhere. I joke with my wife all the time saying, we have a lot of TVs in the house, but then I end up watching TV on my phone. I watch basketball on my phone instead of watching it on TV. So having to see that and how that shapes kids now, there are kids that don't even know that outside play is something that should be part of their day. Sometimes I notice how many kids are in our neighborhood on Halloween, because that's when all the kids come out for trick or treat. And then I'm thinking, we have this much kids in our neighborhood. You never see them. They go to school in their parents' cars. They come back in their friends, and then they're home all day. No outside play, nothing. So for me, we have an agreement with our first son. He's almost five. He only gets to watch anything on weekends, whether TV, whether there is another phone I have. He calls it the big phone, which is, it's like an iPhone, the big iPhone, not too big, but it's bigger than my phone. So it's bigger than my wife's phone. So he just calls it the big phone. So he gets the big phone on weekends, and sometimes he watches TV. Sometimes he watches basketball when I'm watching basketball. And we make sure that the only thing he watches on that phone is YouTube Kids, not the main YouTube. YouTube Kids, specifically for kids. All the programs on there have no ads. They don't run any ads at all. They are usually from 20 minutes long to 45 minutes long or thereabouts, mostly educational. And I believe that's the way Google set it up, just so that parents can have some peace of mind saying, if that kid is watching YouTube Kids, they can be guaranteed that they are not seeing inappropriate ads. They are not seeing inappropriate content. And you can actually set it as a parent. There's parental controls. You can set age appropriate. So now we've moved him to the 4 to 5 age range. Before it was in the 3 to 4 age range. So basically saying, okay, now we can watch things, content suitable for 4 to 5 year olds. There is a password. And another beauty of that YouTube Kids is you can set the duration that the app is going to be on, maximum 60 minutes. So you set the timer, whatever is watching, when 60 minutes is up, the app goes off, technically goes off. It shows this blue, purple screen. And then he comes and says, Daddy, can I get more time? And then I tell him, this next duration of time after this is nap time, is dinner time, or is bedtime, whatever the case is, just so that he knows that the next timeout on the app means you're putting the phone down. So sometimes he comes and he plays his little tricks, says, Daddy, can you remove the timer so that you don't have to keep putting the timer? And then I'm thinking, I see what you're doing. Maybe I let it slide, maybe not. Depends on my mood. So you go do what you want to do. So that's one of the things I actually see as a way all these apps are actually putting things in place to be mindful of screen time. Of course, there are so many other platforms. If you have an iPhone, there is the Apple Family Sharing Center where you can determine all the devices that is on that platform. You can set the parental controls, the content restriction, age restriction, and so on. So those are things I believe parents can take advantage of. Every opportunity I get to tell people about YouTube Kids, I do it all the time. Some of the parents we see at the swim center, I've told them about YouTube Kids. Some of my friends who also have young kids, I've told them about YouTube Kids. And you can use it on any device, Android, iPhone. I mean, it's an app that you can download on anything. So we have it. I have it on my phone. My wife has it on her phone. And then he has it on the big phone. So if one phone's battery is out, then you can watch YouTube Kids on someone else's phone. There is even the app on the TV. So our TV, you can download the app on the TV, on an iPad, on anywhere. So they make it so available because they know that parents are worried about screen time, understandably. I don't want my child to see adverts about an auto mechanic. He doesn't need to see that. That's not his ad to be able to expose himself to. So yeah. So
now I appreciate that. That's something, even though I'm aware of, I haven't utilized that in our day to day.
Right.
So I'll look into that. Thank you.
No worries. No worries.
No, it's just one of those things. I don't know if it's laziness or what, but I just never downloaded it. So.
Yeah, I'm sure we also learned about it from another family, or because I definitely didn't know about YouTube Kids before we had kids. So because there was no reason to, why would I go around watching YouTube Kids when I can watch the main YouTube? So of course, I'm sure another parent told us about it, or my wife found it on one of these mom groups on social media, and we just kind of tried it out and we realized we liked it. So yeah, so wherever we go, and maybe we're on vacation and he has the phone, of course you're putting the time restrictions because we don't want you to be on the phone all day and not enjoy the vacation. So, and I noticed communicating with him ahead of time, setting the expectations, also goes a long way, because I tell him, before I give you this phone, you're gonna have only this amount of minutes, and then when the time is up, then we have to go do this other thing. So that helps in letting him know. So when I take the phone, it's not like, okay, I didn't tell you before. I told you I was going to take the phone when you're done. You did your part. I'm doing my part. So yeah.
Definitely staying consistent. It helps. Yep. In the parenting rule book.
Yep. Yep. So let's talk about passwords, password policies, and even as adults, sometimes out of laziness, we find ourselves using the same passwords on multiple websites, and then we run the risk of getting breached. If one site is compromised because I use the same password, then now I have to worry about my online banking. I have to worry about all the other accounts I have. So what would you say is your experience with passwords? How do you manage passwords and so on?
So yes, I'm like the typical person who reuses passwords.
Oh, no.
Because I've learned. And so I have one account, one of my original emails. It's older than dirt. I created it back in high school. Hmm. And I had a password, and I don't know which company, because I sign up for various things over the years. Hmm. I'm learning to not do that, just because I'm interested in something. I'm not going to immediately sign up for it. But as I mentioned, this email account is 20 something years old at this point. And the password I use for it has been compromised. I don't know through what website, but I find it fascinating because I guess I can say the company, Microsoft, it's a Hotmail account.
Oh, okay.
You can see people who are attempting to log into your account.
Oh, wow.
And I find it fascinating. I probably could pull it up. it'll take some time. But at least 3 to 4 people, and I don't know if they're people or some kind of accounts, you can probably elaborate on that, who try to hack into that account on a daily basis.
Wow. Wow.
I have obviously changed that password. And I as much as I like that password, I am not using it again because it's now over the dark web, the wide web. I'm not really sure.
Dark web.
So that password is dead to me. Mm. But I still haven't deleted the account because I am weirdly fascinated to see how many people who have attempted to get into that account. Now, right now, there is a dual authentication going on. So that account, you need my phone number to get into before you can actually see whatever is in that account. So I'm hoping that dual authentication actually is working in my favor. But yeah, like I said, I am aware of, I am trying to be better. I have passwords with, I'm doing my best to keep it as secretive and as diverse as possible.
Nice.
But it's tough.
Yeah.
Because every time I think I'm using this password for this account, I have to, I end up resetting that password.
I see what you mean. And it's actually something that is even way more common than most people realize, because it's just a lot of hard work trying to figure out how to come up with a unique, difficult to crack password. And it has to have numbers and letters and uppercase and lowercase and fancy characters and hashtags and asterisks. And it has to be at least 12 characters long. So even if you're able to come up with that password, so now I have to write it down because I don't want to forget it, or I have to store it on my phone because I don't want to forget it. And either of those options is not a good option. Writing it down, you might as well just go put it on the billboard on the highway and everybody can see your password. Or if you put it on your phone, who knows how secure your phone is, especially if you don't update your operating system regularly. You store it on a notes app, and if someone gets into your phone and then they see the list of passwords, which you named list of passwords. So now you put the email in front and the password at the back saying, okay, this is for this website. You're making it easier for a hacker to now grab that notes app and then just go try all your passwords. Again, reusing passwords is not the best idea, because if, for example, I have, like you said, Hotmail password, the password is summer 2024, and then I reuse the same summer 2024 on my Costco online account. If hackers get a hold of Hotmail and all the passwords of all the Hotmail users, they're going to use special software. They're not going to do it manually. They use a special software to try all the possible combinations of that username and password on all the websites that Americans who use Hotmail would likely have accounts on. So this is how these hackers actually automate the hacking process. Because they want to do as much in as little time, there is actually software that can try a bunch of username and password combinations on a bunch of websites. So if an American in the US uses Hotmail, chances are they might have an account on Walmart.com, they might have an account on Costco.com, they might have an account on Bank of America and Chase and Discover and all the other online banks. They might have an account on a popular child care center website. They might have an account on a popular university website because they live in a particular city or state. All of those likelihoods is what this software is actually going to start trying. So now I have your email. John Smith is your username. Your password is summer 2024. The software is going to start trying John Smith summer 2024 on maybe 500 different websites that you are likely to have an account on. And chances are, if you use the same passwords, it's just going to give the hacker green check mark, red cross, green check mark. All the green check marks is the places where you have accounts with the same username and password. So now I have access to all those other accounts. But I didn't compromise those accounts. I compromised your Hotmail. But because you use the same password everywhere, now I can see all your other accounts. So if one of those compromised green check marks is your Chase Bank, I log in, I see that you have a little bit of money in your Chase Bank. Now you're at my mercy, because now I can do anything I want. Because you use the same password for your Chase Bank. So now I can transfer, I can just buy stuff immediately, ship it to me. And when it comes to pay on wherever I'm buying stuff from, I can see your account number, I can see the routing number. So I don't even need to transfer something from that account. I can just buy something when it's time to pay, I put the routing number and it tells me to confirm. I confirm because I can see your account. And then I'm buying an iPhone and shipping it to my address and I sell the iPhone. Now I have the cash. I didn't transfer the cash from your account. I bought something with your account number and routing number. It got delivered to me. Now I have a little bit of money because you reused your password everywhere. So that simple scenario is why it's scary to use the same password. Who knows what the access could even be? It could be to a 401k. It could be to just, like I said earlier, use the same password for your childcare website. Now I see your child's name. I see where you live. I see your social security number. I see everything about your family because you have to do that for the daycare websites, whatever. If it's to a school district, I have access to all the information because you use the same password on a school district. If it is your Tampa General Hospital patient profile, now I see all your medical information because you use the same password. So that is why it's important to keep reminding people that you may not think hackers don't need your information. Your information could be the jump-off point to somebody else who is more vulnerable. So maybe you're just a college kid, 18-year-old, there's zero money in your account, there is nothing of interest to a hacker, but then your dad works in a company where and deals with government secrets all day long. They use your account that is not interesting to get to your dad's account that is interesting. Or your mom is a doctor and she has access to all this patient information. Your account is the jump-off point to get to your mom's account. Then they have access to all this sensitive information. So it's important to just keep in mind. And of course, having parents who are not exactly able to use the internet and all these devices, we would be the ones to make sure that, okay, don't just use 123456 as your phone's password. Even if you're using numbers, make it as random as possible. 92457 or something. Something not guessable easily. So, yeah.
And it's so hard because, like, oh, let's just take the number scenario. I mean, there's so many random numbers you can lump together that you can actually remember without attaching those numbers to something like birth dates, anniversaries. It's really tough trying to figure out that balance of what you can actually remember that's not tied to something.
Right. And another thing is, as far as passwords, I always say that passwords don't even have to be in English. Passwords can be in any language or even a made-up language. It could be, maybe you have a favorite quote. It could be the first letters of that quote. And then you alternate the first letter, uppercase, second letter, lowercase, uppercase. And then you add a random string of numbers at the end that you can easily remember. It doesn't have to mean anything to you. It could be the numbers in your license plate. And then you reverse that order. In addition to the first letters of your favorite code, and that's a password. So whoever wants to guess that, good luck with that. Because first thing, they have to know your favorite code. Then they have to know the order of that first letters and whatever it is. And then they have to know which letters are in uppercase. Maybe the first four letters are uppercase and then the last six letters are lowercase. Or I do the reverse or I alternate and so on and so forth. So one of my passwords is actually a quote in my native language. The first letters of that quote in that language, not even the translation to English. And then I added some numbers and fancy characters at the end. That's one of my passwords. So whoever wants to guess that or crack that, then I just say, okay, good luck with that.
No, that's great. Man, that's wonderful.
So let's talk about social media. You were telling me a while ago that you're not on Facebook. So let's just start with that. Why are you not on Facebook? Did something happen or have you never been on Facebook and so on?
So yes. So I am I don't want to say the first, but when Mark Zuckerberg started it back in the day and he opened it to the public, I was part of the first group. Well, I don't want to say the park grouping, but I was one of the first users once it was open to the public. So if I've had an account since, almost 20 years.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah.
goes by fast. So I've had an account a long time. But, and I'm not much of a I'm not much of a talker. I've really maybe made a post here and there, post pictures. When I had the birth of my first child, I posted pictures. Not a lot, just enough. Hopefully not. I've always had to try to figure out that balance for me, what I'm willing to share of my kids. So I'm social, but trying to keep enough privacy for my kids, for my personal life,
right,
separate. So I've always kind of struggled with that. But the birth of my second child, I moved. I was trying to figure out what to do with my furniture. I decided to sell it off Facebook Marketplace. And it was my first time trying to use Facebook Marketplace. I thought I found a legitimate person. And I wasn't in the right state of my mind. I just had the second child. I was still operating with lack of sleep, lack of a lot of brain processing power then. It didn't dawn on me until after I sent my phone number and address to this person that, wait, this, the red flags went off. Oh, wait, this might not be legitimate. And I right off the bat, I reported what I reported the person who was trying to take that information, and I shut down my Facebook account. I don't know if that was the right move, but I just I don't know if this person was legitimate. I don't want my information stolen. I don't know. Closed my account. I got rid of my cell phone, that cell phone number.
Wow.
Started all anew. It may actually be in turn just an, it could actually be a legitimate person, but I was just wasn't in the right frame of mind. And it's like, you know what? It's not worth the risk.
Right.
Got rid of it all with Facebook. Got rid of it that day. It's been hard because I like the elements of social media, of being social. I like connecting to other people. I miss connecting to people. But my thought process of getting rid of that social media, Facebook, Instagram, I've never joined TikTok, Snapchat, I was on for a little bit, got rid of that. It just never connected to me. maybe I was too old at that point. Who knows? My thought process by getting rid of that, I am going to focus on quality and not quantity of friends. So I've been trying, some days more successful than others, but to connect to my friends. And I'm hoping by doing that, I can teach my kids that social media has its place. And you can connect to people that way. But social media has a dark side. Not everybody you connect with are scammers. And not everybody you connect with are bad people. But to figure out who they are, it's tough.
Right.
There was a Lifetime movie I saw back in the day about the downside of social media, where I guess teen girls were picking on another teen on social media. And it's like that just scares me because you have no control. These people can hide behind a computer screen and say whatever they want about a person. And you know instinctively you shouldn't take whatever they're saying to heart. But emotionally, you can't help it. And how do I how can I teach, raise a child to understand this when they're at their mental maturity at the age of, I think you can start joining social media at 13, isn't there?
Yeah. Even at 13. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, you only start knowing who you are and understanding those elements in your mid, at least in your, starting in your 30s.
Yep.
And that's, you're talking about 15 to 20 years on social media without having that mental maturity to handle that. So I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping with my kids that I can form a bond with them, that I can connect to them to understand the downsides of the ups and downs of social media.
Yep.
I'm trying to figure it out as we're going along. I got rid of it because, yeah, it was draining to my mental health. I see all these women I joined a lot of parenting groups who are doing these wonderful things for their kids. And it's like, I work 40 hours a week. And that's not including like that hour of lunch. So I'm physically away from my house 45 hours a week. I don't have time to do these fancy arts and crafts. I don't have time to do X, Y, and Z. How can I compete? I mean, I know mentally I'm not trying to compete with these people, but I feel at times like a failure because I am not grounding up these foods to make the perfect purees for my child or smoothies. It's tough. So yeah, for my mental health, I needed to get away. And I'm still trying to find that balance because my husband still has a Facebook account. And I find myself hopping on his account, not that I don't trust him. It's to feed that dopamine hit that I'm looking for.
Right, right.
It wasn't that bad with Facebook 10 years ago
yep.
when they didn't have Reels.
Yep.
I don't remember when they implemented that. But that feature they installed, that is my downfall because Oh, I'll just watch one video.
And then the next
that one video.
And then the next one.
Yes. And an hour later, I lost my time. And that's time I could be spending cleaning the house or doing something else. So, yeah, I'm trying to stay active and away from that because elements in my life are so much better without it.
Wow.
I'm sorry that was a lot of information.
No. No worries. No worries. Everything you said is actually what people I know deal with on a daily basis. It's gotten to the point where you mentioned how you're not trying to compete, but then subconsciously, everything you see presents as, okay, how can I do what this person is doing? If not better than how they are doing it, how is this making me look like I'm not taking care of my kids well enough because they're doing all this fancy stuff, making all this fancy food, trying to make their kids eat their fruits and vegetables and proteins, when we all know that that is the most difficult thing as the parent of a toddler. But you go online and on social media, you see all these other moms doing these things and you're thinking, how are they doing it? Am I deficient? Am I a failure? No. It's because they are putting the highlights of their life on social media. They're not going to put when their toddler is crying and having a tantrum because they don't want to wear a fire truck shirt to school. They want to wear a dinosaur shirt to school. No one is going to put that tantrum on social media. And all of that, of course, impacting mental health in so many ways subconsciously that a lot of people don't even realize. You end up comparing your husband to someone's husband you see on social media because of what they say their husband is doing for them on social media, but that's not the real life. They're putting the 0.1% of their life on social media. If they can flip it and put the 99.9% that people don't see, then everybody will realize that every family is just like every other family. We're all just trying to do our best, wake up, chug coffee, and then start your day and keep chugging coffee until bedtime. And then you fall asleep on the couch and so on. No one is going to put that on social media. So it's definitely, and around the time when Reels was introduced, both Facebook and Instagram, it's even made a lot of things worse because I know people who would open up their apps and then just keep scrolling. And I'm thinking, are you watching that? Oh, you're just scrolling. It's called some fancy term, maybe doom scrolling or something. But yes, you're just scrolling. You're not exactly watching it. So how does that impact your own mental health? What does that do to the dopamine in your brain? Too much dopamine is not good. Too much of anything is not, even water. When we drink too much water, it can hurt us. So all of that to just say that social media is, I mean, there's the good sides. Of course, there is the downsides. There is the bullying aspect for kids, especially. There is this place I go to volunteer downtown Tampa. It's called the Dream Center. So it's basically an after-school program for middle school and high school, some elementary school kids as well. I volunteer with the middle school and high school kids, boys mostly. And it's just getting there. If they have homework, you help them with homework. Sports, a lot of sports, just to keep them active. I volunteer also to coach basketball, for some of these kids who are interested in basketball. And the long and short of it is, from my experience, I've been doing that for over a year now, once or twice a week, thereabouts. I noticed that these kids just need mentorship. They don't want to be on social media. They are on social media because their friends are on social media. So now they have to be on social media, and it's hurting them. It's hurting their grades. They realize they spend way more time on social media. Some of them, the ones where the schools allow them to keep their phones in class, they are on social media during class, which is not good for anyone, whether kids or adults. If you're at work and you're supposed to be focusing on work and you're on your phone, that's not going to help your productivity. So some of these kids have to be on social media, and they actually, some of them tell me that they would rather not be on social media if all their friends are not on social media. So that says a lot, because they're basically on there to keep up, to not feel excluded. There are some hangouts that are only, the invites are only sent on social media. If you're not on social media, you won't get that hangout, and then you become the uncool kid because nobody's inviting you to anything. And at that age, that feeling of social belonging is even way more impactful for them. So if social media can be removed, a lot of kids would actually do better in school, within their family relationships and so on, so that they don't just get home after doing their homework and then they jump on Fortnite or whatever the kids play these days, simply because that's where everyone is hanging out after school. So you just don't want to feel excluded. That can't help. And I end up advising a lot of them, saying, some of the things you go online on social media to say if there is some fight going on and everybody is roasting the kid that they are all ganging up to roast, some of those comments would end up hurting you when it's time to get a job and they have to do a background check. And nowadays, background checks include social media posts. When we were younger, there was no such thing, because there was nothing like social media posts. They simply go to your local sheriff's office, give them your name, saying, is this person a criminal? Yes or no? Okay, now come start the job. Now they have to do that and then ask you for all your social media accounts and look you up, and including all the direct messages you think are private. If the position is sensitive enough, they can see all those things as well. So if you're on social media calling people names and using specific terms that you're not supposed to be using, it might affect your ability to get a job 10, 20 years from now. So those are the things I tell these kids, that it's all well and good if you use it the right way. Use it to connect with your friends and family. If you're thinking about getting a basketball scholarship, of course, you're going to put in your application, you have good grades, okay, check. You volunteer within the community, check. You post videos of yourself playing basketball, check. And then I look at your social media posts. Do you post certain things about certain people that is offensive? That could affect your chances of getting a basketball scholarship. So maybe think about that the next time you go online and someone is on your nerves, and then you have to say something because they said something to you. That might affect literally your chances of having a successful career. So those are the things I tell them, because now social media is just doing more harm than good when you look at it that way. So I guess my job is to tell them, if you plan to have a good future, social media can affect that. The way you use social media can actually affect your future.
It scares me, the future, because we've all probably unintentionally said things that we probably shouldn't have.
Yep.
But growing up with us, we didn't have to worry because there was no evidence.
Yep, no record.
And if there was evidence of a picture or something, you just shred it.
Yeah.
There's no take backs for these kids nowadays.
Yep. Nothing gets deleted forever. Even if you delete it, I tell these kids about investigations I work on. As a cyber intelligence analyst, I see investigations almost every week about something somebody did and they didn't think it was going to affect something, and they deleted something. And then, of course, if there is a subpoena from a judge, these social media companies have to provide evidence, because you deleted it from your phone. It's still somewhere in the servers of that social media platform. So if it's part of a crime or a criminal investigation or some kind of workplace harassment, these social media companies, by law, have to provide the evidence you thought you deleted. So guess who has to now go say something before a judge? You. Because you did something you weren't thinking and the record is just there forever. So you think twice before posting something or saying something, even if it's in a private conversation on social media. If a judge wants to see it, the judge will issue a subpoena. They're going to dig it up. So,
and it's amazing, even though you post something private or what you think was private, anybody could screen capture that item. Exactly. And it's nothing, nothing's ever deleted.
Exactly.
As much as people think they have deleted it.
Yep.
But I will say, since I I hit the button to permanently delete Facebook maybe a year ago, and unintentionally I went onto an old computer, hit Facebook, and it logged me back in, even though I hit permanently delete.
Yep.
I bet you, I mean, I could be wrong. I haven't tried it since then, even though I re-deleted it. I think if I logged in today, I can probably still log into it. So yeah. Facebook, but I will say I deleted like my LinkedIn account, and that one is permanently gone. My Instagram account, I bet you anything, if I logged in, it still would have.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Anyway.
So in the interest of time, I want us to quickly touch on AI before we wrap up. It's almost an hour and it doesn't even feel that way.
Goes so, quite fast.
Yeah. So in your role as someone who deals with a lot of books and books in print form, books in online form, you deal with sometimes students, and then the students have to write papers. And so far in the, I think, almost 2 years that AI has been around, generative AI, to be clear, because a lot of people think AI is something new. And I remind them, if you've ever used Google Maps to go from point A to point B, that is AI. If you've ever translated anything on a website or speak into a phone and translate to another language, that is AI. If you've ever played any game against a computer, that computer you're playing against is AI. So, yeah, basically, in your experience with how students or even some faculty members use AI, what would you say are the good sides, bad sides of AI, especially within the education sector?
So we're still figuring out on our end. Overall, I think a lot of us can, as long as we use it, AI is a tool. And it could help a student get ideas for their assignment and maybe point them in a good direction. It gets really tough when it creates stuff for you. Now, as an academic, as long as they're citing their sources correctly, it could be used as a tool. But when they are plainly saying that they are creating this work themselves, that's tough. Now, I'm a librarian, so as if I don't see what the faculty see. I know we have tools using, I think it's called Turnitin software.
Right.
That have an AI feature.
Yep.
Exactly. Now, I don't know how accurate that is. But I do know, I mean, when I have used AI to look up things for me, just personal things, some of the citations that it recommends, I think I use Microsoft. I don't know what their tool is called. I'm sorry.
EndNote.
Maybe. Yeah. They put citations at the end where they claim to get it from, but I really question some of the citations because like the first thing it pulled off, it's like, you got all these quotes from the first citation. I don't know where the other three came from, but we tell our students, you can use it to help but don't take it word for word that it's 100% accurate.
Right.
You still have to verify where that data, where that information is coming from. Do your due diligence. Use it as a tool. It can get you to what you potentially need to say or look up. But I used it maybe a few months ago in creating a tool for a web page. I've been struggling how to, I never learned JavaScript. And what I needed to do involved JavaScript. But I didn't have the knowledge or the background. But I know just enough to maybe put things in the right place. And the AI generated exactly what I was looking for. It was phenomenal.
Nice.
So in that element, it's great. It has a lot of potential. Just like any tool, you can use, try to use it for, use it appropriately,
right.
Cite it, put yourself in a good direction.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, especially in my line of work where we see a lot of hackers now trying to use AI to make the hacking process way more efficient. They send all these phishing emails saying you've won something or you have an issue with an account, and you're thinking, wait, I actually have an account with this thing, email, this, what this email is claiming. I mean, everybody has an Amazon account, and then you get an email saying there's an issue with your Amazon password. Before you realize what's going on, you've clicked on that link in that email, and then you're like, wait, I should actually go to my Amazon app and see if I have an issue or not. Because now the emails are so believable. There is no grammatical errors. The emails contain all the right graphics, and it's actually coming in as a legit, it looks like a legitimate email from Amazon. So that's where we are now with AI and how these hackers are using AI. It's basically making the whole hacking process more effective and efficient. We see a lot of increase in fraud cases where hackers would say, you can come work and we'll pay you $200 an hour, and all you have to do is write reviews for companies and so on. It's like basically you're being paid to write reviews for businesses and whatever. And then it's actually so convincing. A lot of people are falling for these scams in thousands of dollars worth of losses because the hackers are using specific terminologies that they got from AI to send the initial email. And then once the person replies, and then the follow-up email uses the right terminologies like you would expect from a business that is in charge of writing reviews for products and getting people paid for writing those reviews. So that's something that is every now and then on NPR, I hear all these fraud incidents, and I'm thinking, I don't blame the people falling for it because they don't know any better. The emails are coming in with legitimate sounding terminologies. So it would take another level of knowledge. Maybe if you have a cyber background, then you'll be able to determine, or it would take just talking to someone that you trust saying, oh, check this out. You believe this is true? And chances are, once you involve someone else, that person may not even know as much, but that person would advise you highly likely, less likely, and just even tell you to pause, sleep on it before going ahead. So that helps quite a lot, especially where fraud is involved, because the people that I've seen that fall for these fraudulent issues, they go it alone. The email comes in, they think they're smart enough to be able to detect who is trying to trick them. Those are the ones who fall for it the most. There was an issue in St. Pete, Florida, where a former law enforcement official, a retired law enforcement official, fell scam to someone trying to sell a timeshare in Mexico, and almost $1 million later, before he realized it was a scam. And these are drug cartels in Mexico running this scam. So now they are using established call centers. They are including AI to generate all these like prompts and scripts of what to tell the people on the phone. They're actually calling people and using the right terminologies. We are interested in buying your timeshare property. We would give you this specific rate of return. And they're using all these business terms. And you're thinking, well, I've been trying to sell this timeshare. This person is calling me from a call center. I do my research. I see that the phone number is actually registered to a call center in Mexico. This has to be legitimate. And then before you know it, they're asking you to pay a fee before you can continue to the next stage. This happened in St. Pete, Florida. So, yeah.
It's so tough. It's like hearing stories like that. It makes me want to just turn off all technology and just move to the woods and just forget about people.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. It's getting scary. Who knows what, the next wave of AI is going to bring. Even having kids even makes it more scary. They go online, they're chatting with someone, they think is their friend from another school, and this person is just out to mess with kids. And as a parent, that just gets my anger going in all this kind of direction. So are we going to now deny these kids to ever use phones? Because, you want to be able to get in touch with your kid, especially when they start going to elementary school and middle school. Or do we just buy flip phone for everyone? So mommy and daddy are even using flip phones. So you can't complain when we give you a flip phone because look, mommy and daddy are using a flip phone too.
And it's so tough because flip phone would be easier.
Yep.
It would be so much easier. But I think that's why I think if we can, at least personally, if we can just have keep just talking to the kids, having that extra person who can maybe, this might seem suspicious.
Yeah.
Just let them know. Just talk to somebody else. And
I agree. Just maintaining open lines of communication. I'm learning that it works with kids because sometimes I think, can he understand what I'm telling him? But he understands, he's hearing it. It may not indicate his understanding, but then maybe a few days later, and then he's reminding me something I told him a few days ago. And then I was like, oh, so you were paying attention? I was like, yeah. I always pay attention. I'm like, nah, you don't always pay attention.
Then he comes back and tells me,
see, daddy, you're not paying attention. I'm like, what are you talking about? You are the one not paying attention.
They're absorbing things that we don't necessarily realize they're absorbing.
Yep.
Until you get caught, like, oh, you were paying attention.
Exactly. It's been fun. It's been fun talking to you. This has been great. 1 hour went by so quick, and so maybe we can set something up later.
That sounds wonderful. It was wonderful talking with you. And
talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, bye.